Hello, this is Dane Jensen, the CEO of Performance Coaching and the chairperson for this year's CLO Exchange Canada Conference. Looking forward to welcoming you to Toronto this July 21st to 23rd for 3 action-packed days focused entirely on learning and development in the age of disruption. There has perhaps never been a more important time to talk about learning, with automation, reskilling, and the digital transformation on everyone's agenda. And of course, these problems are too big to face alone. You know, the best way to tackle them is together as a community to share what's working, what's not working, and where to go from here. In the spirit of sharing, I'm pleased to host this little podcast series in the lead up to conference, featuring the speakers who will be there to share their wisdom. The purpose of the podcast series is really to whet your appetite and also to ensure that when we get to July 21st, you can really hit the ground running. So without further ado, here is the first episode of the CLO Exchange podcast series. All right, I am joined by Kayla Campbell, who is the Senior Director of Performance and Learning for North America at Pernod Ricard. Kayla will be speaking at the conference on how it is that we can engage remote leaders in organizations. And so Kayla, I thought a natural place to start would be kind of at the beginning. And, you know, how did this come to the forefront for you, for your organization? What was this that made it an important topic for you to dive into?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on your little mini podcast here going into the conference. I'm really looking forward to connecting with people during our time in July. And I think this is an important topic because so many companies now, I mean, the face of work is changing, as we're all so aware of. And more employees, including myself, actually, are remote workers. And so what has really changed the tide for us at Pernod Ricard is just seeing that transition of more and more people working from home, working out of Starbucks, working wherever they are, and at all different times of the day, right? So it's not even just where they're working, but it's the 8-hour workday has also shifted. So as learning professionals, you know, we have to adapt to that change. And some of the things that we have done is just try to meet people where they are, think more about, you know, anytime or real time learning and how people can get access to information at their fingertips. And we've even done some things just recently about, you know, reconceptualizing even how we do meetings and looking at it from sort of a diversity and inclusion standpoint. And knowing if you've got a room full of 20 people and one person's on the phone, that experience is not the same for that person on the phone as it is for those in the room. So how do we make it more equal? How do we make sure that that experience is as close to the same as we possibly can? So it's been a journey, but we are spread out, Pernod Ricard, 85 different countries around the world. And then, of course, we are spread out even within North America in my bubble of that Pernod Ricard world. So just being able to flex with that change has been incredibly important.
And so just to give people a sense of scale in terms of this transformation, you know, how big is the workforce in North America? How many people are working remotely or on flex work kind of arrangements? Is this the standard now, or is this a good chunk of the workforce, or how does that all kind of divide up?
That's a great question. I wish I had the actual stat for you that I could pull that out. But, you know, we are about 1,500 employees across the U.S. and Canada. Mm-hmm. Our two major sort of epicenters are New York and Toronto. And then we have divisional offices spread out across Canada and the U.S. as well. So you still probably have the majority of people working close to an office. But even still, the satellite office experience is not quite the same as being in your main headquarters. And then we have, you know, a sales force that's really spread out, and their office is their car, right? And they're going from account to account. And as we are becoming, you know, we're a very decentralized company sort of worldwide, but we're starting to do more centralized things. And so even the remote experience and working with different affiliates across Pernod Ricard globally, you know, our main global headquarters is in Paris, France. So dealing with that experience of, you know, how do we connect with that team there, and how do we manage multiple time zones of global teams, and, you know, making sure that the experience is a positive one for all of our employees. And then on top of that, how do we learn and develop as employees in this new landscape?
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting because I think there's this interesting balance between the benefits of working remotely and setting, you know, to some extent your own hours, your own location, and all of that stuff, which is a huge attractor of talent. And then I've often found that when people get into those highly flexible environments, there's also this counterbalance of how do we make sure we're building a sense of engagement and team and culture, and that everybody feels like they're part of the same organization, which is that counterpoint sometimes to that feeling of autonomy and kind of personal accountability when you're kind of working a little bit more flexibly. Is that a
absolutely
is that a tension that you felt or that you guys have kind of thought through, or does that ring true for you?
No, it does ring true to a certain extent. And one of the things I've done on my own team, because we're all for the most part remote. I do have two who live in Toronto. I've got one in sort of Jacksonville, Florida. I've got another person located in New York, and I'm going in between all of those places. And one thing we do for sure is, you know, every meeting, even if it's a one-on-one, a team weekly meeting, everyone's on video all the time. You know, the only pass you get is if you say you're sick or something like that. And it's like, you know, but a bad hair day, it's not good enough. You know, you've got to be on video. And when we made that change, and that happened maybe just within the last year, around a year, it's been unbelievable, actually, to see the engagement of my team sort of skyrocket. And just from something as simple as being on video, but you actually feel like, you know, you see one another, you see people laugh. We have hand signals that we give of, you know, if you're on mute, you know, there's like thumbs up, thumbs down. And you just feel so much more connected. So that's one of the things where, you know, I think as learning professionals, you make some things mandatory. You say, hey, everyone needs to do this. And there's other things where you try to lead from example. And this has been one of those things for me that's been really cool. And it's been inspiring, actually, for the team. I think, you know, we would go on larger team calls, not just our, you know, smaller sub team. And we would all go on video most of the time without even thinking about it. Just like, you know, that's our routine.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, more people are getting on video. And it's starting to create a bit of a cultural change because it works. So it's been really interesting to see. That's just with one small thing. But, you know, we send jokes to each other online and I am one another. And the more you can do to just maintain that sense of connection, I think the better engagement you get across your team.
I love it. And it's such a simple thing, too, hitting the video on, you know, switch as opposed to just sitting there anonymous. Did you have any, was there any resistance to that up front? Because I do think sometimes people kind of love the anonymity of, well, you know, if I'm not on video, I can kind of, you know, catch up on my email, or, you know, I don't necessarily have to have a shower that day. Was there any pushback at all? And or did you have to make any kind of changes around norms to kind of signal, hey, it's okay if you don't have your suit and tie on, you know, we're going to do video anyways? Or was it a pretty easy kind of hump to get over for people?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it was relatively easy. And again, that whole lead from example, you know, my dog would bark in the background,
right,
and I'd make it there to be, you know, my hair, sometimes I'm wearing a baseball cap and sorry, you know, that's just like where I am today. And so I think if you model that as a leader, there's a comfort level of like, okay, well, if she's doing it, you know, it's fine for me if my dog barks and because the Amazon package arrived or what,
right,
you know, whatever,
yeah,
that situation is.
Yep.
And that's sort of reality about a remote workforce. I mean, you know, it's true. The dog is going to bark or something is going to happen or whatever. I mean, that is the reality of being in a home office, or even if you're in a co-working space, people talking behind you. So now it just seems so comfortable. And I think actually that added level of not always looking your best or the dog barking or whatever adds a very human touch to our team. And if anything, only increases the engagement. But it is a little bit challenging for people at the beginning, but eventually you just sort of get used to it. And I actually think it's good that it inspires me to shower every day, because when you work from home, you can get into a bit of a rut. So
yeah,
it does inspire me to at least like kind of turn it up a notch just a little bit when you know you're going to be on video.
That is true. Yeah, I mean, self-care is correlated to our resilience under pressure. So it's nice to have that little boost to get
exactly.
You over them. That's great. And it is, you know, it is really nice, I think, that, and this is something I've noticed as well in a number of different organizations that I've come in contact with, is this kind of notion of, you know, what used to be known as the facade, right? Of like, my life is constantly perfect. My house is always in great shape. I always look, you know, 100%, and, you know, everything is under control. I think it links to this whole thing of vulnerability and authenticity, right? Is that we can just be pretty honest and open with our teams and say, listen, everybody's life is a little chaotic, and that's okay. My life's a little chaotic too. And we don't have to kind of glaze over that just, you know, so you can kind of turn your video camera on. I think it's great to model that. So this is sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. I think so too. I mean, I think we need to move towards a more human-centric style of work, and that level of authenticity, I think we all win.
Yeah, 100%. So this is a good bridge to just the whole topic of communication in general. You know, I think people have enough difficulty with communication, even when everybody's in one office space. You know, we hear consistently leaders going, I don't know how much more I can communicate, but I keep hearing from people that we're not getting, you know, enough information, and there's surprises. And I think that challenge is only ramped up, you know, potentially when you move to a more remote environment. So how have you thought about, you know, the vehicles that you use to communicate with employees? Is there, you know, is it the video thing the predominant channel, or are there other ways that you've engaged kind of remote workers?
Yeah, great question. And I think, you know, we've come a little bit further on that discussion. I think we still have some work to do. But some of the things we do other than just, you know, video is trying to create a better balance of those who are in the room and those who are joining online to make sure that there is fairness of equal contribution so that one person who's on the phone isn't limited. We've also changed some of our learning approach. So actually my team, just in a couple of weeks, you know, we've already started this journey, but we're continuing it as we do a lot more webinars. And we are always on video. We encourage our participants to be on video. We heavily use the chat feature in our, you know, WebEx sort of BlueJeans platform, and encourage people to participate that way. We always record every session so that we know that, you know, despite what you've got going on, people can still tune in to what happened during that online learning. And we're also really trying to up our digital learning game by making far more, you know, interactive, gamified online learning experiences. So that's one of the ways we're trying to get the communication out there. We do have a weekly newsletter that we also put out in the U.S. And you know, that's just one more connection of like, and the cadence of doing it on a weekly basis, you know, definitely means you're getting the most frequent news. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to put together on a weekly basis, but but it does, you know, create a constant platform that people can access. And I think in some ways the challenge is a good one of, you know, really having to think again about my remote theme of how do I make sure that everyone is in the loop? You know, we have weekly team meetings, we have weekly one-on-ones. And I think that would happen regardless if we were remote or in person, honestly, but you have to have those multiple channels to communicate the same message and really be clear about what your key message is. I mean, I think learning professionals have, you know, not got this right in the past, which is that most people, you know, can only remember really one or two key messages. And so we tend to inundate employees with like, you know, 2-day workshops with like 15 different concepts. And, you know, they take home about one of that anyway. So by limiting what we're doing to smaller chunks of time and 1 to 2 key messages, I actually think that's a more successful way to reach employees and to get content out there.
That's interesting. And I mean, you know, we often talk about how the vast majority of learning happens in the, you know, in the troughs. It's often through our difficulties that we learn what works and what doesn't work. Was there any kind of formative experiences as you guys were kind of navigating this transition? Any kind of watch outs for others that might be starting down this road? Or conversely, anything that you found that has been, you know, particularly successful among some of the tools that you mentioned?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, lots of learnings. This is a 3-hour podcast, right?
Yeah, that's right. Sure. Yeah, yeah. We'll go all night. Yeah.
So we go. Okay. No, I think one of the big learnings for us, and it's always sort of trial and error, but, you know, we just launched Workday, our new HRIS, and we launched a whole new performance approach simultaneously. Shame on us. I don't know what we were thinking. It's good. It's good now, but it was a bumpy ride with lots of learning. But, you know, we were creating things like e-learnings on how to do a walkthrough on Workday. And we're putting all this time and effort into it. And then we realized, okay, how many people had actually gone in to look at it? 10, you know, something like really low number. And we realized, okay, that's not going to work. That's not meeting employees where they are. Mm-hmm. They're not used to going into the system, or maybe it's not the right content for that sort of medium. So then we took it online with live classroom webinars. And, you know, we have like, what did I say, 1,500 people across Canada and the U.S. And we had 730 people join the like five webinars that we did across all five of them. You know, so we were like, okay, yeah, that's going to work for people. And even the recordings of those webinars did better off than some of the e-learning that we had created. So I do think it's a little bit of trial and error and figuring out, okay, what do people actually want? And making sure you've got the measurement in place to see. Because what I do notice sometimes is what employees say they want is not actually what they'll do. Mm-hmm. So they say they want, you know, a great LMS with all this e-learning. But then when we look at who's watching it, you know, not that many people are actually watching it. And maybe they will someday. But we certainly need to think about, okay, that worked, that didn't work, readjust, here we go again, test and learn. So we have that to be pretty successful. The other thing that's worked has been sort of disseminating the information. So we work a lot with our HR business partner counterparts, and you know, we give them the key messages and presentations, and then they go to their client group and present that information to them. So it's working, we're getting better at it, but it's been certainly a journey.
Well, and I think, you know, I think that's one that a lot of people are feeling their way along right now, right? You know, it's, I don't think any of us have all the answers. And in particular, you know, what you identified around this counterintuitive sort of gap between, you know, how good as human beings are we at predicting our behavior and actually identifying what it is that's going to make us, you know, participate in something versus not. I think, you know, all of the research would tell us that all of us are pretty bad at actually, you know, identifying what drives our decision making. And so this whole kind of rapid prototyping, right? I mean, it's, you know, I used to work at a pricing consultant for a number of years, which was a very interesting field because, of course, you try to get people to tell you how much they'll pay for something and they have no idea. Like, until they have to make the decision with actual dollars, it's very, you know, hard for them to predict. And I think the same is true with how we spend our time. People often are very bad predictors around how they will choose to spend their time, you know, when the reality hits. I think it's particularly interesting, though, what you said about the difference between, you know, e-learning modules that live in an LMS versus having sort of the equivalent of office hours where people can show up at a webinar at a predefined time, as opposed to just having it be available on demand. Because, of course, you would assume that having it available on demand is actually more convenient and that people can use it when they need it and, you know, just-in-time learning and all of that. But it sounds like, yeah, the webinars have been a lot more successful, which I think is quite interesting. And are those all video on as well, or are there exceptions for learning events?
Always video on. So we have, you know, a presentation that we run through. You'll see us presenting it throughout. We even pass off to different facilitators. We try to make it as engaging as possible. So we'll use even things like live polling to see what people are feeling, put a, you know, generate a word cloud, whatever. So there are definitely tips and tricks that you can do even within webinars so that people aren't just, you know, kind of tuning in and then answering your email at the side. But if every about 5 minutes you have a live polling question or something that you want people to generate in the chat, you know, it constantly keeps people engaged in this sort of very, you know, limited attention span society that we live in right now. Because like a half hour webinar, you could lose people 10 minutes through. So if you keep that engagement up, we found that it's been quite successful. And hopefully people go, oh, wow, that 30-minute webinar was actually really useful. And the next time we offer one, you know, they're more inclined to come back. And what we've seen from the e-learning is that, you know, they don't want to go there for just the show me how to do this type stuff. You know, they want to go there for an experience. So we just designed a whole new e-learning based on our new leadership model. And it's all superhero themed. So you have 19 different missions based on our different competencies that go all over the world, solving problems at a distillery, a winery, so that you can become a Pernod Ricard superhero. And you slowly sort of gather all that you need to be a superhero. And then Alex Ricard at the end, our global CEO, congratulates you. So that people are more interested in. That's fun. That's an experience. Mm-hmm. But if it's an e-learning just to show me how to complete a form, no, I want that faster.
Yep.
And if I tune into a webinar for 20 minutes and I've got everything I need, I can keep going.
That's interesting. And how much have you rolled into this modality? You know, are you still thinking about in-person learning for certain select groups or certain events, or is, you know, the vast majority or all of what is happening at Pernod Ricard happening, you know, online and remote?
No, we still offer quite a large section of in-person workshops, but my rule of thumb for that is, you know, it has to be something that could only be done in person. So mm-hmm. something we offered last year was we introduced the Grow coaching model to all of our managers to make our one-on-one monthly conversations more effective. Well, that was, you know, I think was like a half-day workshop that we led, and 90% of it was hands-on, right? Role-playing, asking questions, discussion-based. You know, as I would love to see the technology that could do that someday, but I think for something like that, that has to be done in person. And so I don't think the in-person training is truthfully ever going to go away. I think that's actually what people enjoy. But we've gotten more creative about how do we take more of the knowledge transfer kind of content and put that online and really make sure that if we're bringing people together in a room, that it's very hands-on, it's very real, very employee-centric. So the Grow model is one example of that. The other thing that we do is we have a digital onboarding experience that we're just working through right now for all new hires. They sort of complete their week one, week two, and that's going to all be largely online. But then within your first 3 months, you attend a two-day experience that we call Distilled. We're distilling information to you, obviously.
Yeah, very on brand. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, very on brand. And the whole point of it is we want you to become brand ambassadors. So there's like a mixology class, there's a wine tasting, you get a tour of our vodka. You know, everything is, you know, there's a scavenger hunt around New York City that's all with your phone and taking pictures. And that's worth coming into the room for. That's worth being around people for. But learning how to fill out my expenses, you know, I don't want anyone sitting in a room to learn how to do that. So it's picking and choosing, but making sure that time together is very valuable.
I love it. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what banks are doing with branches, right? It's like, we're going to move as much stuff online as we can. And at the same time, let's try and elevate the branch experience. So when people come in, it's actually enjoyable. It's unique. It's a community space. There's, you know, different things that can happen there from a human experience standpoint. It's like, if we're going to bring a group of people together, let's make sure it's not just somebody standing at the front of the room lecturing in a way that they could have done online or in a webinar. It makes complete sense.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, the center of what we do, you know, selling alcohol, is really about creating experiences, about memorable moments, what we call conviviality, which is sort of being your authentic self. And not only when we bring people together, do we want it to just be, you know, a workshop one and done, but we go for dinner, we'll, you know, go to the bar and have some glasses and, you know, make sure that that time together isn't just about the learning experience that happens sort of in the classroom, but that opportunity to connect with all those people that we've brought together later in the day.
So this raises an interesting point, which has kind of been in the back of my brain for our whole conversation, which is the whole notion of relationships. And, you know, when you look at the research on employee engagement, so much of employee engagement is about the kind of relationship I have with my manager. It's about, do I have a best friend at work? You know, all the stuff that is, you know, uniquely human, and I think has long been thought to be uniquely driven by the people physically around you and, you know, having close physical proximity. Have you noticed anything about changing work relationships, or is that still the same thing? It's just a new way of building relationships.
Yeah, I think it's just a new way of doing it. I mean, I even look at my kids, my two stepsons, and, you know, they could walk to their buddy's house down the street, but they're FaceTiming. You know, I think it's the reality of the new world that we live in. And I think it does take extra effort. I think that you have to be a person who's willing to be open, and you have to put in that little bit of extra effort to maintain the relationship if you're not sitting right next to somebody. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is any less valuable just because someone's not in the same room as you. And if anything, sometimes I find, you know, I'm in New York maybe once a month or something, and when I'm there, I love it. I feel like a, you know, a D-list celebrity. Everyone's like, oh, you're here. You're in the office. How's it going? You know, productivity is very low because everyone wants to say hi to you. But that tells me, though, that I'm still maintaining those relationships in between being there in person. And then it makes those times that we are together that much more rich.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, in that vein, we will all have a chance to be in person and meet you and see you again July 20th to 22nd. And with you at the front of the room talking, it sounds like that will be a really rich experience and a good chance to kind of connect offline as well over some food and some drinks. So thank you so much for your time. It was really, really useful. I especially appreciate the practicality of it, because I think so much of this is in the little stuff, like getting the video on, you know, figuring out the difference between e-learning and webinars, and, you know, how do we kind of leverage stuff. So just very practical stuff, and I'm sure lots more to come at the talk at the conference this summer. So really appreciate your time and looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. It was enjoyable for me also. Can't wait to see you in person at the conference also.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you in a few weeks here in Toronto.